though a serious turn. You speak very well, but I don't know how much you understand other things.
I raised an eyebrow. Which things?
I don't wish to be indelicate, honored, but Citizen Savarden doesn't appear to have any money in her possession.
Beside me, Savarden grew tense again, tightened her jaw, swallowed something she had been about to say.
Parents, continued Inspector Supervisor Skyot, buy clothes for their children. The temple gives gloves to attendants, flower bearers and water bearers and such. That's all right, because everyone owes loyalty to God. And I know from your entrance application that you've employed Citizen Savarden as your servant, but...
Ah! I understood her.
If I buy gloves for Citizen Savarden, which she clearly needs, it will look as though I've offered her clientage.
Just so, agreed Inspector Supervisor Skyot.
Which would be fine if that's what you intended, but I don't think things work that way in the Gerentate. And honestly,
she hesitated, clearly on delicate ground again.
And honestly, I finished for her, she's got a difficult legal situation that might not be helped by her association with a foreigner.
My normal habit was expressionlessness. I could keep my anger out of my voice easily. I could speak to Inspector Supervisor Skyot as though she weren't in any way connected with Lieutenant Onn, as though Lieutenant Onn had had no anxieties or hopes or fears about future patronage from her.
Even a rich one. I'm not sure I'd say it quite that way, began Inspector Supervisor Skyot.
I'll just give her some money now, I said. That should take care of it.
No!
Savarden's tone was sharp, angry.
I don't need money. Every citizen is due basic necessities, and clothes are a basic necessity. I'll have what I need.
At Inspector Supervisor Skyot's surprised, inquiring look, Savarden said further,
Breck has good reasons for not having given me money.
Inspector Supervisor Skyot had to know what that likely meant.
Citizen, I don't mean to lecture, she said, but if that's the case, why not just let security send you to medical? I understand you're reluctant to do that.
Re-education wasn't the sort of thing that was easy to mention politely.
But really, it might make things better for you. It often does.
A year ago, I'd have expected Savarden to lose her temper at this suggestion. But something had changed for her in that time. She only said slightly irritably, No. Inspector Supervisor Skyot looked at me. I raised one eyebrow and a shoulder as if to say,
That's how she is. Breck has been very patient with me, said Savarden, astonishing me utterly. And very generous.
She looked at me.
I don't need money.
Whatever you like, I said. Inspector Supervisor Skyot had watched the whole exchange intently, frowning just slightly. Curious, I thought, not only about who and what I was, but what I was to Savarden.
Well, she said now, let me take you to the palace. Honored Breck Gyad, I'll have your things delivered to your lodgings.
She rose. I stood as well, and Savarden beside me. We followed Inspector Supervisor Skyot to the outer office. Empty, Douse Kate, Inspector Adjunct Kate, I would have to remember, likely gone for the day given the hour. Instead of taking us through the front of the offices, Inspector Supervisor Skyot led us through a back corridor, through a door that opened at no perceptible cue from her. Station, that would be, the AI that ran this place, was this place, paying close attention to the Inspector Supervisor of its docks.
Are you all right, Brack?
Asked Savarden, looking at me with puzzlement and concern.
Fine, I lied. Just a little tired. It's been a long day.
I was sure my expression hadn't changed, but Savarden had noticed something. Through the door was more corridor and a bank of lifts, one of which opened for us, then closed and moved with no signal. Station knew where Inspector Supervisor Skyot wanted to go, which turned out to be the main concourse. The lift door slid open onto a broad and dazzling view. An avenue paved in black stone veined with white, 700 meters long and 25 wide, the roof 60 meters above. Directly ahead stood the temple. The steps weren't really steps, but an area marked out on the paving with red and green and blue stones. Actions on the steps of the temple potentially had legal significance. The entrance was itself 40 meters high and 8 wide, framed with representations of hundreds of gods, many human-shaped, some not, a riot of colors. Just inside the entrance lay a basin for worshippers to wash their hands in, and beyond that, containers of cut flowers, a swath of yellow and orange and red, and baskets of incense for purchase as offerings. Away down either side of the concourse, shops, offices, balconies with flowered vines snaking down. Benches and plants, and even at an hour when most Rodchai would be at supper, hundreds of citizens walked or stood talking, uniformed, white for the translator's office, light brown for station security, dark brown for military, green for horticulture, light blue for administration, or not, all glittering with jewelry, all thoroughly civilized. I saw an ancillary follow its captain into a crowded tea shop and wondered which ship it was, what ships were here. But I couldn't ask. It wasn't the sort of thing Breck from the Gerentate would care about. I saw them all, suddenly, for just a moment, through non-Rodchai eyes, an eddying crowd of unnervingly ambiguously gendered people. I saw all the features that would mark gender for non-Rodchai. Never, to my annoyance and inconvenience, the same way in each place. Short hair or long, worn unbound, trailing down a back or in a thick curled nimbus, or bound, braided, pinned, tied. Thick-bodied or thin, faces delicate-featured or coarse, with cosmetics or none. A profusion of colors that would have been gender-marked in other places. All of this matched randomly with bodies curving at breast and hip, or not. Bodies that one moment moved in ways various non-Rodchai would call feminine, the next moment masculine. 20 years of habit overtook me, and for an instant I despaired of choosing the right pronouns, the right terms of address. But I didn't need to do that here. I could drop that worry. A small but annoying weight I had carried all this time. I was home. This was home that had never been home for me. I had spent my life at annexations and stations in the process of becoming this sort of place, leaving before they did to begin the whole process again somewhere else. This was the sort of place my officers came from and departed to. The sort of place I'd never been, and yet it was completely familiar to me. Places like this were, from one point of view, the whole reason for my existence.
"It's a bit longer walk this way," Inspector Supervisor Skyot said, "but a dramatic entrance."
"It is," I agreed.
"Why all the jackets?" asked Savarden. "That bothered me last time. Though the last place anyone in a coat was wearing it knee-length. Here it looks like it's either jackets or coats down to the floor, and the collars are just wrong."
"Fashion didn't trouble you the other places we've been," I said.
"The other places were foreign," Savarden answered irritably. "They weren't supposed to be home."
Inspector Supervisor Skyot smiled.
"I imagine you'll get used to it eventually. The palace proper is this way."
We followed her across the concourse, my and Savardin's uncivilized clothes and bare hands attracting some curious and disgusted looks, and came to the entrance, marked simply with a bar of black over the doorway.
I'll be fine, said Savardin, as though I'd spoken. I'll catch up with you when I'm done.
I'll wait. Inspector Supervisor Skyot watched Savardin go into the palace proper and then said,
Honored Breck, a word, please?
I acknowledged her with a gesture, and she said,
You're very concerned about Citizen Savardin. I understand that, and it speaks well of you. But there's no reason to worry for her safety. The Rach takes care of its citizens.
Tell me, Inspector Supervisor, if Savardin were some nobody from a nothing house who had left the Rach without permits, and whatever else it was she did, to be honest, I don't know if there was anything else. If she were someone you had never heard of, with a house name you didn't recognize and know the history of, would she have been met courteously at the dock and given tea and then escorted to the palace proper to make her appeal? Her right hand lifted, the barest millimeter, and that small incongruous gold tag flashed.
She's not in that position anymore. She's effectively houseless and broke.
I said nothing, only looked at her.
No, there's something in what you say. If I didn't know who she was, I wouldn't have thought to do anything for her. But surely, even in the Gerentate, things work that way.
I made myself smile slightly, hoping for a more pleasant impression than I'd likely been making.
They do.
Inspector Supervisor Skyot was silent a moment, watching me, thinking about something, but I couldn't guess what, until she said,
Do you intend to offer her clientage?
That would have been an unspeakably rude question if I had been Rodchai. But when I had known her, Skyot Auer had often said things most others left unsaid. How could I? I'm not Rodchai, and we don't make that sort of contract in the Gerentate.
No, you don't,
Inspector Supervisor Skyot said, blunt.
I can't imagine what it would be like to suddenly wake up 1,000 years from now, having lost my ship in a notorious incident, all my friends dead, my house gone. I might run away, too.
Savardin needs to find a way she can belong somewhere.
To Rodchai eyes, you look like you're offering that to her.
You're concerned I'm giving Savardin false expectations. I thought of Douse Kate in the outer office, that beautiful, very expensive, pearl and platinum pin that wasn't a token of clientage.
I don't know what expectations Citizen Savardin has. It's just, you're acting as though you're responsible for her. It looks wrong to me.
If I were Rodchai, would it still look wrong to you?
If you were Rodchai, you would behave differently.
The tightness of her jaw argued she was angry, but trying to conceal it. Whose name is on that pin? The question, unintended, came out more brusquely than was politic.
What?
She frowned, puzzled. That pin on your right sleeve, it's different from everything else you're wearing. Whose name is on it, I wanted to ask again, and what have you done for Lieutenant On's sister? Inspector Supervisor Skyot blinked and shifted slightly backward, almost as though I had struck her.
It's a memorial for a friend who died.
And you're thinking about her now. You keep shifting your wrist, turning it toward yourself. You've been doing it for the past few minutes.
I think of her frequently.
She took a breath, let it out, took another.
I think maybe I'm not being fair to you, Breck Guyod.
I knew. I knew what name was on that pin, even though I hadn't seen it.
Knew it.
Wasn't sure if, knowing, I felt better about Inspector Supervisor Skyot, or much, much worse. But I was in danger at this moment in a way I had never anticipated, never predicted, never dreamed might happen. I'd already said things I should never ever have said, was about to say more. Here was the one single person I had met in 20 long years who would know who I was. The temptation to cry out, "Lieutenant, look, it's me, I'm Justice of Torin 1-esque," was overwhelming.